Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. America's relationship with Russia is characterized by mistrust and political confrontation. If that sounds familiar, you might want to stop by and see Tom Brokaw and Robert Legwell discuss the new Cold War this Wednesday at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. Robert Legwell is one of the country's foremost experts in the former Soviet Union and Russian policy. He's published numerous articles and books on the subject, including Return to Cold War. He's the Marshall D. Schulman Professor Emeritus in the Department of Political Science at Columbia University, specializing in the international relations of post-Soviet states. He's also a graduate of the University of South Dakota. He joins us from Boston today. Welcome, Dr. Legwold.
Pleasure to be with you.
As some people talk about, are we headed for another Cold War? Are we already there? You know, how do you respond to that?
Well, as you can tell from the title of the recent book that you cited, Return to Cold War, I believe we are there. One shouldn't make the mistake of assuming this is at all comparable in fundamental respects to the original Cold War. There are very basic differences. The original Cold War enveloped the entire international system. It was driven by a very fundamental ideological animus, competition between political and economic systems. There was that constant shadow of nuclear Armageddon. None of those things apply today, but there are characteristics, alas, that are very much like the original Cold War, and particularly during its early stages. I'd give you, there are five or six listed in the book, but to indicate what I have in mind, let me identify just two. First of all, as in those early years, 1948 until Stalin's death and a little after in 1953, each country now blames the other almost exclusively for what's gone wrong. There's no introspection. There's no willingness to take a look at how we did this dance together over 25 years. And the accusation against the other side as being responsible almost entirely is not merely because of what it's done. It is because of what we think the other side is, the nature of its system, the nature of the impulses driving its foreign policy, which then suggests that there's not much expectation that things will improve until something fundamental changes on the other side, even in the nature of the system or of the leadership. And as I say, that's only the beginning of a list of four or five characteristics that do look like the original Cold War, granted the fundamental differences.
When does it sort of, start rolling? When does the snowball going pretty fast? Is it the annexation of Crimea? Is it Vladimir Putin's role in Russia? Is it the meddling with the 2016 election? How far back does it go before we've...
It's the first thing that you cite. The relationship from the collapse of the Soviet Union through the 90s and even through the first Putin presidency and then the presidency of Dmitry Medvedev had been up and down. There had been hopes followed by disappointment and increased tensions, but there was always the expectation that somehow we might be able to gain traction and move forward. But the Ukrainian crisis drove it over the cliff. And it has been, it has become, in that context, an openly adversarial relationship. Both sides refer to it as such. Indeed, this last set of sanctions that the Senate passed in August is entitled Sanctions in Adversarial Relations.
For those, let's go back to 2014 and the crisis in Ukraine. And for people who say, well, that is kind of one-sided, look what they did. What's the United States' role in sort of dealing with that unfolding that we could have done anything differently?
This is an important question, and I would start by saying, with no difficulty do I blame the Russians for having, by their actions, the annexation of Crimea, and then their direct involvement with the civil war in Donbass in eastern Ukraine, are responsible for what I said a moment ago, driving the relationship over the cliff. But that's not going to really help us understand how to deal with it unless we also focus on what the steps were, the set of concerns were that led to the Ukrainian crisis, that led to Russian behavior, first the seizure, annexation of Crimea, and then involvement in the Donbass war. And at that level, there were probably sins of omission rather than commission by both sides. But the Russians, as they looked at the development of events from the fall of 2013, the last stages by which Ukraine was attempting to work out the relationship with the European Union, into the violence that then unfolded within Ukraine, beginning in fall, December, and then January, and finally, ultimately, around Maidan in February, as the Russians reacted in that context, there was much in Western policy which was blind to the problems. There were things that the West could have done during that period of time, even up until the last minute in the crisis around Maidan in the third week in February, that might have averted what the Russians did in Crimea. But again, as I say, that doesn't for a moment reduce Russia's responsibility for the effect of literally violating international law, international norms, the expectations for the fundamental structure of relations in Europe in the post-Cold War period. But it didn't happen overnight. We didn't get to that kind of Russian behavior in Ukraine in the context of those events had it not been for a lot that had occurred before that, back to the 1990s, including NATO enlargement and up through the Russian invasion of Georgia in 2008. There was a lot going on during that period of time where both sides did not understand how serious the potential confrontation could become.
Let's talk about Syria and Russian involvement and American involvement in that. How has that pushed this conversation about a new Cold War forward for you?
The Syrian case is interesting. In some ways, it could have been a countercurrent because, after all, the two countries presumably, at least at a theoretical level, have a common interest. We both are eager to defeat ISIS. We would like to see the civil war in Syria end and the humanitarian tragedy cut short, or we begin to mitigate it, and some kind of a diplomatic outcome in Syria by which you get a stable government acceptable to the Sunni majority, but that is, doesn't fall into the hands of jihadists, radical elements. But we haven't been able to get there. So while there should be the basis of cooperation, we did have an important moment of cooperation in the U.S. and Russia working together in order to begin the process of eliminating Assad's chemical weapons. But we haven't been able to make progress across the broader front, although in limited ways we've done it now in the military actions in the area. We have a so-called deconfliction agreement, which is working in terms of informing one another of air operations. Both of our air forces are operating in the same country. And there has been even some further, although difficult, cooperation among military command beyond the deconfliction part of it. But in general, I would frame the relationship in the following way. I think the Syrian case should be a basis of cooperation, but what continually gets in the way of it is the what I call this new Cold War, which in its content represents, as you said at the outset, very deep mistrust. And as a result, the mistrust continually gets in way of the kinds of things we'd need to do in order to really push the cooperation. We're never really willing to, what I would say, risk trusting the other side. And that's because of the general condition of the relationship.
During the presidential election of 2016, much was made about the relationship between Vladimir Putin and candidate Donald Trump. Pretend that you don't know what you know now that's transpired between Election Day and now. How did you view the way people were challenging candidate Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin and some of the things that Donald Trump was saying at the time? What did you think then?
Well, there wasn't, before the election, there was not very much attention given to this open question of whether there was any kind of collusion between elements or figures within the Trump campaign and the Russians. We were, by the summer, before the election, aware that the Russians were interfering in the election. We knew of the hacking of the DNC. We certainly knew the use of social media, things like RT and Sputnik and the like. In terms of the candidates' own statements about Russia, they were, for anybody like me that follows U.S.-Russia relations, they were surprising because they appeared to be very out of sync with the way in which not merely the U.S. media, but most politicians, both Republican and Democratic Democrats, were thinking about Russia and the challenge that it posed. I personally was sympathetic to what appeared to be his instinct that he would like to begin digging out of the hole that the two countries were in, looking for ways to improve relations. But there was no sign that there was content to it, that he would know what to do, how you would, in fact, address the difficult issues that stood in the way, like Ukraine and Syria and an intermediate nuclear force treaty that we believe the Russians are violating. There was no sense that if he were elected, and at that time there was, most people thought he would not be elected, but were he elected, that he would know how to go about it. So there were really two sides to it. It was a little curious the way he was speaking, given the general tenor of American politics on both sides, as I've said, Republican and Democratic. But given my view that it was the new Cold War was very unfortunate, we really needed to address needed to search for some way to begin turning things around. That I was sympathetic to. I just didn't see where the content was.
Was it a lost opportunity?
The changing of
bringing in a new president. Let's just say that. Is that an opportunity then?
Yes, of course it should be. But there is a kind of perversity to what's happened. I think when President Trump was inaugurated, at that point he and a few of the people around him, not everybody that he would appoint to his cabinet, but he and some around him actually at that point did want to move forward in the relationship. They certainly said so. The Russians had hopes, Putin himself, that indeed that might happen. But very quickly, the question that now consumes the media and the Congress, the investigation into Russian interference, and then the related question of whether there was any kind of collusion, began to close down his options. And as a result, whatever may have been his preferences, and is certainly through Secretary of State Tillerson's first visit to Moscow in April, and then up through President Trump's exchange with President Putin at the Hamburg G20 summit this summer, there still seem to be sort of glimmers of hope so one could move forward. But at this stage, and in fact it really was emerging by March, so I wouldn't put too much emphasis on what I just said, glimmers of hope, that the president was, as one very senior member of the administration said to me 3 weeks ago, completely boxed on the Russian issue.
How important the results of the investigation into, you know, members of the campaign, of the Trump campaign, is really important to this presidency. How important are the results of that investigation to international relations with Russia?
The question now, whatever may be the outcome of the Mueller investigation, that of the three congressional committees, on the question of collusion, and my own guess, I may be wrong, my own guess is that it probably is not going to demonstrate extensive collusion. I think the real issue is the way the question of Russian interference, set aside the Trump dimension, but the question of Russian interference in the election is now front and center in American politics, particularly for the Congress and especially for the Senate, and for both parties, both the more hardline Republicans like Senator McCain and Senator Graham and Senator Cotton, and for a wide range of moderate Democrats that historically have been in favor of engaging Russia and cooperating with them. But for them right now, all of them, the issue of Russia's interference in our election and the prospect that that hasn't ended and could affect future elections is the number one issue, as important as Ukraine or Syria or INF or anything else. And in fact, it comes before all of those other issues. So until the two sides find some way to address that satisfactorily for both sides, and right now the Russians refuse to address it, and the U.S. side is addressing it incorrectly, from my point of view, if you really want to have success in dealing with it, in removing that threat to our elections. I see no prospect of that changing anytime soon. So I believe that issue, not the question so much of Trump's involvement or the Trump team's involvement, but the core issue of Russian interference in our elections, that is absolutely central.
Dr. Robert Legwell, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy your time back here in South Dakota.
Okay, look forward to it.
And you can see Robert Legwell talk with Tom Brokaw. The talk is called The New Cold War, The United States, Russia, and a World of Differences. That's this Wednesday, October 18th at the University of South Dakota. Starts at 7. The doors open at 6. That is open to the public.